Susan Montanaro, and you're listening to Dreams and Detours, a show about the life we plan to have versus the one we're living, for better or not. Everybody has a story, and I believe we find ourselves in each other's stories.
Hello, and welcome to the show today. With me, I have Iris Wolk, a friend and mom and wife. She's also has an amazing career as a social worker for what we've just determined is close to 40 years. So Iris comes to us today with a tremendous amount of stories and history, really just connecting with humans and really with her own life. So welcome to the show, Iris.
Thank you.
Yay, happy to have you. So you and I have a history because you're the mom of one of my very dear friends, and now I've known you for so many years, but the best part of today, I think, is really talking about the parts I don't know. And I tend to think that, you know, we are all like onions with all of these tremendous layers and parts of us. So I want to start off by asking you, where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in the Bronx to my mom and my dad, who unfortunately died at a very early age. And then I was brought up with foster parents.
Okay. So how old were you in that transition of going from your birth parents to your foster parents? How old were you at that time?
I would say I probably was about 3.5 years old.
Okay.
When my mother died. And I was a bit older. My father died about a year and a half later. And I suppose that was, I was about six years old.
So you can recall that memory.
Oh, yes, I recall it very well.
Did you have siblings?
I had, yes, I had two biological siblings, two sisters.
Okay.
And then as I came to my foster parents, I also had my foster sister who has since passed away.
Okay. Did your biological siblings come with you to that particular home?
No.
Okay.
My older sister was about, I would say, about 15 when my father died. And so she was still living with my dad, and my other sister, who was hard of hearing, was in the Lexington Avenue School for the Deaf.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this was sort of during the Depression time, and things were very difficult economically.
Right. At that time, I imagine separating kids wasn't completely unheard of. It was probably a little more common as opposed to today, where we always look to not
exactly
make that decision.
So my father, of course, was looking for a job. My older sister was able to take care of herself more or less.
Mm-hmm.
So she remained with my dad. And my dad had to look for other care for me. And so he did ask my aunts and on my mother's side and his side. And at that time, everybody was so poverty-stricken that bringing in an extra person and another child to be responsible for was very, very difficult for them.
Right. So the next best move was to get you into a family that could really provide and offer you an opportunity to have family, I suppose. Did that foster family end up adopting you?
No, they didn't. But before I even went to the foster parents that I grew up with, from the time I was about seven until actually I got married and after, they were my family.
Mm-hmm.
Not only were they my family, but their whole entire nuclear surrounding family were my family as well.
So you were really fortunate under unfortunate circumstances to be able to navigate into a new family that really embraced you and you embraced them and gave opportunity to give you a sense of what family is, I suppose.
But until I got to them when I was seven, because I had my eighth birthday with them, I was in an orphanage And I was in other foster homes.
Okay.
So that was a little difficult.
Oh, I would imagine
for a child.
It would be. Yeah.
And a lot of separations.
Right.
But fortunately, when I came to my parents' house, I had a whole new life.
Yeah. And you were fortunate, because I would imagine that even then, the idea of bringing children in or even considering to add to the family, you know, at that age, it was, you know, kind of hit and miss in terms of wanting to bring in a child who could assimilate
yes.
into what was already established. So good. So you had that opportunity, which gave you foundation and obviously set the course for you in your own life. What kind of career paths or work did your new family, your parents do?
My foster mom was a housewife. And my foster father was a candy and tobacco salesperson. He worked for a company that distributed candy and tobacco to candy stores.
Sure.
So he was like the salesperson. He was the salesperson.
Terrific. Okay. So established work and
yeah.
you know, consistent work. And when you were growing up, you had, obviously, at this point, you're moving, you know, yourself into a new dynamic and family surrounding. And so what kind of an influence would you say in your early years or even going into your teenage years did that family have on you? Did your new family have
on you?
Well,
they were a wonderful family. They were a Jewish family. I would say middle income.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom didn't work, so she was home all the time. And very loving.
Great.
And enjoyed really having me in the home because my foster sister at that point was about to get married.
Okay, so instead of going to empty nest, they were able to continue
yes.
to nurture and have...
So they yeah. enjoy. I would say they enjoyed having me and I enjoyed being with them. And I think they sent me to Hebrew school. They were not ultra religious, but definitely was identified with
right.
the Jewish religion.
Right.
So I went to Hebrew school, and first I didn't want to go, but then I loved it.
Right.
And then I went on to, you know, I was in elementary school, and when I first got to them, I could barely read because just being in school in the other homes, I couldn't really concentrate.
Sure,
school.
That distraction interrupted your learning, no doubt. That certainly happens.
So they all sat with me at night and we'd read. And I had my reader at home from school and mm-hmm. I just picked up. I guess one would say that I blossomed.
Yeah, no, that's tremendous, really, given your circumstances and that intermittent period to be able to turn that around and have such loving support so that you could excel is really the dream. And you were able
right.
to thankfully, you know, find yourself in that situation. Tell me a little bit about how you then would move on and, you know, graduate from high school and navigate your early adult years and what that looked like for you and what your desires were for yourself. Like, what were your thoughts?
Well, it was very interesting because being a foster child, I had a social worker and she would come and visit us, the family. Well, my mother and myself, because my foster father was working.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed speaking with her. And
you had a connection.
I had a connection. And I even told her, I said, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to be a social worker.
Oh, so the seed was planted early. So, and another thing, just because this came immediately to mind, you had the same social worker over the longer period of time, that duration.
Yes.
So then you can attest to the importance of that continuity and consistency for a young person.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
She was wonderful, and so was my mom. They were both very important in my upbringing, I would say.
Right.
And
Clearly, she planted a seed for you and just exuding her.
And she came to my wedding.
Right, exuding all of that kindness and that love and that direction, it did something, right? And yes, the permanency of a relationship, surely, that's tremendous.
Yeah. So, I don't know if she knows it, and I have no idea of whereabouts now, but she was important in my life.
Yeah, that sounds it. Yeah. That's amazing. So moving up and into your young adulthood, then you have an interest to pursue that. Where did you kick off your academic advanced learning after high school?
Another interesting point was that, you know, I said to my mom, I really want to become a social worker and go to college. And she said, oh, you don't need to. You know, you'll find a nice fella and you'll probably get married and he'll take care of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they said to girls
in
those days.
Isn't that something? Yeah, it wasn't a lot of push.
Yes.
Right, to be your own career person, exactly.
And so I went to high school. I took a commercial course, and I enjoyed it. You know, steno and typing and all that jazz, bookkeeping.
Right. Traditional career path and work path.
Right, because what did girls become in those days?
Sure, mothers.
They became mothers, right. Secretaries, or teachers.
Right.
So I graduated high school. And during the time when I was a senior in high school, I met my husband.
Okay.
I graduated in June. I met him in April.
Okay.
At a dance, a fraternity dance. And, it's a funny story, but I really didn't want to go to that dance because...
Isn't that the way it always goes, right? Didn't really want to be in that place at that time, but...
It was in the Bronx, and he called my friend because, it's a long story, but I used to babysit for the young man that Alan, my husband, spoke to. And he was the club leader of teenage boys. And he belonged to a fraternity at City College. And so he was talking to, his name was Harold. He said, do you know any young women in the area that, you know, we want to have a dance? This is going to be our first fraternity dance. So Harold said, yes, my cousin, as a matter of fact, not me, but my girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
Has a whole group of girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
So he called my friend and he said, hello, Miss Nemirovsky. And when my friend told me, I said, isn't that funny? He called you Miss Nemirovsky.
Right.
He was like the classy.
Very formal.
The classy college person.
Right.
So, then he said, I understand that you have a group of friends. Would they like to come to the party? And she said, yes, I'll talk to them.
Terrific.
They probably would. So she told me about it. I said, but it's in a basement? I said, it's a fraternity and they're in a basement. I don't know. I don't want to go to a basement party.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody talked me into going, and of course I went. And
goodness you did.
Yes, because Harold, who I used to babysit for, said, I hear you're not going to that party.
Mm-hmm.
And my club leader is going, and he's very nice looking. And he's on the wrestling team, and he's going to be an attorney. He wants to go to law school. I said to Harold, maybe I will go to that party, and I'll get a new dress also.
Look at you. That's terrific. So that paid off, because that dance obviously led to the fabric of your life moving forward.
Yeah.
So how long after that dance and that meeting did you and Alan get married?
I would say 2 years after.
Okay, very good.
And as a matter of fact, I was talking to my mom, and, you know, Alan gave me his fraternity pin.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you really want to get married? You're so young. You're so this. You have plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, I did. I wanted it. I said, and it's the first time, actually, that I didn't listen to my mother. And there I you married, go.
And you married,
and I married
him.
My husband.
Because you knew there was something there. And there was, you know, we know when we know. So we
I
have to follow
it.
That. Yes.
And so we'll be married 60 years.
Oh, congratulations.
January 31st.
That's pretty tremendous. Congratulations. Not so many people can make that statement and that comment nowadays, which means, you know, you have something really very special.
So he was going, you know, he was going for his master's, mm-hmm. and then he went for his PhD.
And so you were married 2 years later, and then you were now...
I was working.
You were working. He's doing his educational track. And
I helped him with, you know...
With
that.
Getting... You supported that process. Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And so take me to the stage where now you were looking to have your own family. And
okay.
What that started to look like for you. Because now you're working, and so social work is not in the forefront of your scope at this point in time, but parenting or becoming a parent would be.
Well, we became parents, and Alan continued his study. At first, he went to law school for a short period of time, and then he decided on education.
Right.
And so he finished up his PhD. And I remember I was bathing the children at night, and I went into the kitchen and I said, you know, you're finished. I think I'm going to begin my education.
It was your turn.
It was my turn. By that time, we had the small apartment and we moved to the suburbs.
Okay.
And I was learning how to drive, and I said, as soon as I get my license,
right,
I'm going to start at Rockland Community College.
There you go. So you had your time in, your children were born, have your home life was being, you know, established, and you were preparing yourself essentially with driving, obviously, in suburbia to really take your leap forward.
And
so
I did.
Was that...
Very exciting.
I was just going to say that must have been a super exciting time for you. You went to school in the daytime or in the evenings? Like, how did you manage and navigate?
Well, he was teaching at Bronx Community College at the time.
Okay.
And so I would take my courses on the days that he was off.
Okay. You weaved it in.
We weaved it in.
Okay.
And I graduated from Rockland Community College. Mm-hmm. And I went to a local college here in Rockland County, mm-hmm. Dominican College.
Okay.
And I took social work.
Okay.
And...
Did you love it right away? Did you just know?
Yes, I loved it.
You
I
knew
just,
from young age. Okay.
I knew, as I told you. Yeah. I just knew what I wanted to do. And so I graduated Rockland Community, went to Dominican, took my bachelor's in social work. Mm-hmm. And being that I had a bachelor's in social work, I applied to NYU because I would soon be graduating. Mm-hmm. And they admitted me for advanced standing, a one-year program,
right,
which was fabulous.
Right, which we are very grateful we still have that advanced standing today.
Yes. And so I graduated from there.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, I became a social worker.
So your dreams are starting to be realized, which is really important, obviously, for your own track and your own sake, but also, you know, you're a mother now. And so in your own way, being able to show your children.
Right. I was role modeling
how to
them.
That's right. Move forward and to create their own dreams. To pursue.
Actually, we both were, because we were both working very hard.
Yes.
Together.
Yes.
You know, he was teaching college. I went to college, graduate school, and... I volunteered, I remember, at the women's shelter.
Right.
And so I had that experience besides my field work. And I applied for a job at ARC, Association for Retarded Children.
Okay.
And I got it.
Yeah. So now you're working with children with special needs. And... Tell me a little bit about how that worked for you, because, you know, you were inspired yourself by your own circumstances through the connection you had with a social worker. And so here you're able to, it almost feels like pay it forward or pay it back in some
way. It did feel like that, because I worked with a great group of women. They were retarded women,
mm-hmm.
who lived in a lovely community residence.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, I was the liaison between them and their family and their workshop where they attended.
Right.
Every day and learned to, well, they used to do things in the workshop and they enjoyed it. They liked it. And they liked the idea of going someplace every single day.
Absolutely. Structure and routine and being able to create or express. Right. I mean, that's the human, you know, connection and humanness to why we're alive and what we're doing. So
I was that liaison. I also did groups with them, socialization groups. And we used to talk about going out to restaurants, visiting places in the community, just
living as normally and as much
as normally as possible.
Yeah. So it's a full circle at that point when you think about it, because that's obviously what you receive from the nurturing that you had. It's just like living as fully, living safely.
Right.
Right. And expressing yourself so that you could
exactly
really feel and experience everything.
And they did.
That's amazing.
And they were very happy in this particular community residence. Very, very happy.
How long were you there?
I was there about, I graduated in 81. I was there until 1986.
Okay.
When I took an exam to work at for the state.
Okay.
At Rockland Psychiatric Center.
That's exciting.
And
so what did your social work field look like for you at that point?
At that point, I had gotten the job. I passed the test.
Mm-hmm.
And I went for interviews, and I got the job at Rockland Psychiatric Center. And I worked in the admissions unit, in which the patients would come in, and then I would set them up on the outside. Again, the liaison between the patient and the community.
Right.
And I worked with a whole team of people. I worked with a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a nurse, an internist.
Sure.
It was a whole team of people.
Facilitate the needs of the individuals. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I spoke to them. I educated them about how important it is to take their medication.
Right.
I work with the family if they've had one, mm-hmm. if they had a family.
Right. Because not in all cases is that true.
No.
Right.
And in some cases, the patients had a family, but at that point, they really didn't want to bother with the patient.
Yeah.
Which was very sad.
Very sad. Yeah.
So
I always found, I mean, you know, I am not a practicing social worker, but I do have an undergraduate degree in that mm-hmm. field. And even through the learning and education and now through my conversations with others, yourself included, you know, it's we know that we're the closest, or we make the greatest connection on so many levels, especially emotional and psychological levels, often in these cases with these individuals. And anything we can do to normalize or help keep a person in a certain frame, right? Keep them in a certain frame of safety, or keep them in a certain place of feeling like you're seeing them, they're being seen, and bringing that to each moment you get mm-hmm. to share, the value there is just tremendous.
It is.
And it changes the trajectory of the care they're receiving.
Oh, absolutely. And I would prepare them if they didn't have families, and many of them didn't. I would prepare them for their community residence interviews.
Right.
And how to present themselves.
Right.
And I went along with them on the interview. And I just love my job there.
Yeah. That's special.
It was a very, very special job.
I mean, you've kind of, you know, so just to kind of recap a little bit, you end up going back to university in your 30s,
yes.
which, you know, is very popular right now and today, but 40 years ago, not so much.
Right.
So it was super brave. You know, you go down the road of becoming a social worker, and really you've spent your life giving back in so many ways. It's just countless at that point. It's truly invaluable.
It was, I just absolutely love my job, and I love the people I work with.
Right.
Because they were just as dedicated
Absolutely.
As I was.
Yeah, so in service, right? I mean,
right.
It's beautiful.
And the parents that came to see me, mm-hmm. and, you know, they were so happy to meet a social worker who really cared about their family.
From your early days, you really understood
what it was
so
like.
So many of those parts, from loss and grief to being disconnected from your biological family mm-hmm. roots mm-hmm. to being, you know, in an orphanage, something most people cannot say they have had the experience, to being in and out of a couple of different homes. That's sort of, you know, acceptance, rejection. So those are more emotions that you can pile on, to finally being embraced by a loving family and being so fortunate to get that chance to be nurtured and to be lifted up and out into an adult life. I mean, layer upon layer of experiences there. So yeah, within your work, I would imagine your ability to understand and connect and really feel was always, I guess, paramount.
Yeah. I loved the idea of being a social worker. And I guess, like you say, giving back was important to me also.
Absolutely.
It really was.
Absolutely.
Because I had so much to give back for.
Sure. Absolutely. So fast forward a little bit toward, you've spent many years in that field, and at some point you decided to retire from the psychiatric center.
Yes.
And that was that just due to, okay, I've reached an age and stage of my life where I'd like to go into a proper retirement?
Well, we started to travel.
Okay. So yeah, it was your own desire to do more. And
my children were older.
Yes.
And I thought, well, this is a good time, to be with my husband.
How many years has it been now that you're retired from that?
I would say about 11 years.
About 11 years. So just to add in, because we wouldn't want to leave out the part of your husband, Alan, ended up going back and getting his law degree and finishing that dream his that he had.
Yes.
So once again, the Wolk family is going back into academia. Which is super exciting, because you're both continuing to, at every stage of life, pursue your dreams.
Well, he really encouraged me.
Right,
I don't think if it weren't for him, he never resented the fact that I was going to school or doing my homework.
He shouldn't. That's exciting.
And he really encouraged.
And so then he had his turn to sort of go back and execute on a dream.
Yes.
And so that enabled him to do create a whole new path for himself. And so you're retired out. He has a JD now. Tell me a little about, because I'm super excited about this new, chapter of your lives. And yes, you're both somewhat retired in a way. You're able to travel and sort of dictate, your life and your schedule. But I want to hear about this partnership that you both have found yourself in, using both of your, skills, your social work backgrounds, and now Alan has a degree in law.
Okay, it's interesting because we both, being that I'm a social worker and he's an attorney, Alan and I decided to do divorce mediation, which we do together.
Which is so exciting to me. Like when I heard this news, I was like, wow, like talk about a partnership, or taking your own partnership to the next level. And how brilliant, because divorce is obviously never pretty or,
right.
So on a positive necessarily.
Let's say, harmonious divorce.
Yes, I love that. It's like a great channel, a title for a book, a show, a practice. And so how has that been, being able to bring your forces together?
We both really like it. We like working together.
Okay.
And the clients definitely like it.
Appreciate
First
it.
First of all, they come to us. They both sit on the couch together.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk to us in this comfortable room.
Mm-hmm.
And it works out very well for them.
You
and they're being
safe,
role models for their family.
Of course they are, because you're creating a safe space where they can be themselves and talk openly, obviously. It's comfortable, and they probably feel a certain amount of nurturing, even in this particular moment in time, where they're separating, but doing it with a bit more grace, let's say, than they might have.
And the women feel that there's a woman in the room.
Yes.
Who's there,
who's hearing them.
Who's really hearing them.
Yeah.
And the men feel, good about it also. And it works out extremely, extremely well. And it works out for us.
Of course it
does.
Because
now Alan is partially retired.
Right.
So we do this, and you know, when you come to divorce mediation, you only have one attorney. So two attorneys aren't battling each other.
Right.
So you're talking to one attorney, one social worker. They're both working out their own agreements.
Right.
Their own financial.
Right.
You know, how they're going to split their funds, so on and so forth. Visitation.
Right.
And they're just doing with a couple.
And you're able to, well, the good news is that you're also able to hear all parts, understand who's involved, let's say if there were children, you know, in the equation, and guide them so that it sounds and seems reasonable and fair. And you're looking at the, I'm sure, the longer and the deeper picture here of how everyone's going to be impacted.
Yes.
And not just, you know, where egos
exactly.
might lie.
Exactly.
And so that becomes something that I would imagine the couples that you've worked with down the road will look back and just be so grateful. It's like a gift that continues to give,
yes.
especially if they were not really poised to be so kind to one another or so generous with their thought toward their kids.
Right.
And that's just, you know, again, a priceless opportunity to be fair and be decent and have some grace in a situation like that, almost as much as hopefully they had when they came together.
Right. And they're saving money.
Because well, of course,
to go
yeah,
to
financially.
Two attorneys,
right. Financially, of course, the
so
burden.
So they could have that
yes.
for each other and for their children.
That's it. That's it.
You know?
Why waste?
Why waste
when
it?
You can use that for your lives and now
right.
your double households that
exactly.
you'll have to create.
That's right.
And creating fairness. Yeah, I think we all encounter so many different people we come upon in our lives who've gone through that divorce process. And I often don't hear very good stories.
No.
And so I feel like you're doing, again, working in service
yes.
to create harmony when often it doesn't exist in divorce.
Right.
And that's huge. Whether, I mean, I know you know that, but I just want you to really know, like, that's huge. Like, this is a model, as far as I'm concerned, that should be replicated over and over again.
I can't see why more and more people,
yeah.
you know, don't involve themselves in something like this.
Right, right.
Because it's, look, divorce is not pretty.
No.
But if you could do it in such a manner where you could figure out your own plans.
Right.
And not have it dictated by, you know, some
right.
other influence or, you know, two lawyers battling.
Or just some scripted technical tool
right.
that gets fed to you
yes.
without the consequence of, like, how real life works.
Sure.
You know, and it's just this, you know, rote, you know, script that we read off to people. Yeah, that's not real. That's not personal. And
exactly.
so this becomes really personal. So I know that you're both doing this more in the part-time vein. How long do you think you're going to continue? Is it something that keeps you going, or is it something that...
For as long as we can.
For as long as you can. Good. I think that's exciting.
Really, for as long as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Because why not? We sit in our own home.
Right.
And speak to, you know, clients. And
right.
So many of them, you know, they become our friends after a while.
Isn't that kind? Wow. I don't know how many people in that line of work could say that they can develop an ongoing relationship
yeah.
that continues. That's so. Special. Really special. I know we're going to talk more about, or I'm going to talk more about this, because I think this is the kind of dynamic that we need to see more of. You know, whether it's in my community of social work, friends and colleagues, or just all around, I feel like this is the kind of thing that we need to push and
I think so.
Start spreading, you know, because we're really living in a time when we need to make connections again and lift our head from screens and,
yeah.
you know, and become more, you know, designed to be with one another and have that exchange. So I think that's what it's all about anyway.
Yeah.
So you have so many different hats that you've worn, and, you know, I don't want to, like, close down, because I know there's always stories to tell, but just wrapping up today's story, what kind of advice would you give to the public, people, whether it's, like, advice to women pursuing their own paths or advice to couples, because you have such a strong, amazing relationship with your own husband, and now you obviously work together, but what kind of advice would you give to people in general for today's world, because you've had such an amazing life?
It's difficult to say, but I would say, I would try to say to somebody, don't you think about your husband and your wife, and think about what you could do for each other, not just what you could do for yourself or what he could do for himself, but how you could work together to make your goals come true.
Right.
And how you could work together to enjoy your life and share things and just be each other's friend.
Right.
I think that's important.
Yeah, I think we don't see enough of that, and we need to see probably more of that. Kind of just have each other's backs.
And just make time to sit and talk to each other.
Right.
Eat your dinners together. And just enjoy your life together.
Yeah, that's good. No, sometimes it's just really the simplest direction and the simplest steps that we take in order to keep everything together.
Listen to one another.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You don't have to agree on everything, but you should give someone the floor and the space to say whatever. Yeah, that's awesome. It was so nice talking to you today. We're going to have multiple conversations. This isn't the last we've heard from Iris Walk, because this woman has plenty of stories inside of her. And well, we'll theme it for another day and time, but we thank her for being here.
And I enjoyed it, Susan.
Oh, really, thank you.
Enjoyed speaking with you.
Me too. Thanks for listening today. We do hope that you will return for another episode of Dreams and Detours.
That's it for this episode of Dreams and Detours. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe, and share it with your friends. You can find me at dreamsdetours.com and at dreamsdetours on Instagram. Thanks for listening.